views and opinions expressed on the following podcast are those of the persons appearing on the program and not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. Welcome to another edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc. Let me just check it. Yeah, it's me. A lot less of me these days. My diet is working. Well, I shouldn't call it a diet. My change in lifestyle. It's still a diet. And yes, do I feel better? Yeah, I guess until I see a nice piping hot apple pie with vanilla ice cream. Yes, moderation. Eat in moderation. That'll be fine. Moderation, what's that? Yes. Slice me a piece of apple pie. Yeah, forget about the slice. Put the slice aside and give me the rest of the apple pie with the ice cream. It'll never get out of my system. It just won't. Oh, well. Another cross to bear. Have to do it. Got to keep healthy. You know, had a few health scares, and hopefully this will scare off the scares. Oh, well. It's our lot in life. Are you facing similar lots? Forced to change your eating habits? Hey, we knew about forced to change things, or people want us to change, right? We have ADHD. We do face an ADHD wall. Doesn't mean we have to stop. We just got to figure out how to get around it. And yes, the fact that other people are saying, you got to fix yourself, it doesn't quite help things. Not exactly inspirational. Hey, stop trying to tell us what we have to do. Why don't you give out a helping hand? That would help. Nothing helps more than a helping hand. That's why they call it helping. We can help each other. And that's what Club ADHD is all about. It's a place for us. We people. We adults with ADHD. We have the podcast. We have the Facebook page. And the Twitter account. Go to clubadhd.ca for the links. Or just type it in Google. Club ADHD. You'll get there. Of course, Club ADHD is supported by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. And yes, just because it has Canada in the name doesn't mean that their website couldn't help you if you live in the U.S. or in Europe or wherever you're listening. And we have listeners all around the world. Go to their website. I urge you. Just check it out. Lots of information there. No matter if you think that you want to start something up like a support group, or you're just interested in finding out more, or maybe you'd like to find out how to spread the word about ADHD, become an advocate, go to cadac.ca, cadac.ca. Lots of good information on there. They've got links to a blog. Heidi Bernhardt puts out some terrific information. That said, I just thought of something. I promised Heidi I would send off a blog. I typed one out. I did that last week. Didn't do it yet. I think I better. Procrastination, yeah, we know what it's all about. I do. I've got my hand raised when it comes to procrastination. Hey, I'm putting out this podcast a little late, but better than never, right? Procrastination. I'll fix it one of these days. Bada boom. We know what it's about. And yeah, we thrive on stress and the deadlines. The closer we get to the deadline, the more creative we get, the more focused we get. Hopefully we'll hit that deadline. And if there's no one overseeing the whole process, sometimes we'll go over the deadline. Hand waved. I'm waving my hand. What? That's what we deal with. That's it. Hey, I'm preaching to the converted, right? You know what it's like. And I hope you're doing well. You're not doing so well? Maybe you're struggling? We all can identify with that. I've been there. I just came out of a little bit of a rocky patch. I'm coming out of it, and that's the good thing. And that's the thing that we have to remember, that, you know, we do face rough patches, more so than the average bear. Yes, your average person does have a rough patch or two, but we seem to have a little bit more than that. We have obstacles to face. We all know that, right? And sometimes it's not easy. And it's easy for me to talk about it if I don't have it. But that's the beauty of Club ADHD, that we all experience similar things. Yes, ADHD, it's a big building, but it has lots of departments. And there's a common thread. We're all in that building. However, we might not all frequent the same department, but there's a common thread there. And if you're struggling, why not mention it on the Facebook page? Be willing to help yourself. You know, tell us about it. You'll be surprised how many people will offer advice. And yeah, you know, advice is like, well, you know the old saying. But we've got some pretty smart people, we're not dumb, who frequent the Facebook page and offer advice. That's very good in my humble estimation. And yes, I've been known to throw out some advice. And yeah, you can throw out the stuff you don't need. Doesn't mean that just because it's there, you have to go by it. You have to adhere to it. No. You might get some gems out of it. We're here to help each other. Not only to just to gather, but to gather and just make our lives better. Because I've come to the realization that if we don't help ourselves, no one will be willing to help us. So go on the Facebook page. Tell your story. Maybe you're having a good time of it. Hey, tell us that too. We'd love to hear it. Maybe you've had some successes. What you term as successes in your life. Tell us about it. Tell us how you got there. Maybe we can learn from it too. You know, it doesn't all have to be doom and gloom. We've been helping people, though. I'm happy to report, even on the Twitter account, people have been in certain situations in life, just feeling down and just hopeless. I've seen very inspirational posts from people to help those individuals. And yes, I've been known to throw out a few posts as well to offer my assistance as best I can. And hey, just because we need help doesn't mean that we can't help others. That might lead to our own help. Like what you give is what you get. It's an old cliche, but it's true. Hey, we've got a good interview coming up. I know it's a broken record with me. I say that all the time, but it's true. We have some very interesting people we talk to, and this week is no exception. We've got a person who has ADHD, but is getting on with life and the challenges. And overall, I think he's pretty happy. So it's a worthwhile story to hear his story. I'm sure you'll get something out of it. So I'm not going to keep going on and on. Let's get right to it. The interview portion of the podcast. He wasn't officially diagnosed with ADHD until later in life. And that diagnosis, did it come from his need to know? Not really. It came about as a result of someone else's need to know. Kind of curious. Curiosity. Are you curious about the curiosity aspect of it? Well, he'll tell you, and you will be curious no more. How many times can I say curious? Well, what's the count up to now? No, I won't get into that. I'm getting off topic. He went through high school not knowing, did fairly well. Then came university and the challenge. He almost didn't make it until someone extended a helping hand. Now, what's that all about? He'll tell us. Later in life, he was diagnosed. And he evolved when it came to his career. Because he became an ADHD coach. And he's doing well at it. He's feeling good about himself. That's the vibe I got. Yeah, he's had trials, tribulations, as we all do. But overall, I think he's happy with his lot in life. And that's a good thing. And maybe we all can learn from it. Hey, let's find out. His name is Jason Froetz. And we started off our talk with Jason telling us about his official diagnosis.
I was diagnosed, 26 years old.
Okay.
I just turned half a century, I hate to admit. So 24 years ago.
What led to it?
What was interesting is I always suspected there was something about me that was different. It's hard to kind of pinpoint it, but mm-hmm. it was always something that was not just about focus or concentration but even socially and stuff. Sometimes, sure. Conversations, you felt impulsive or sometimes complex calculations in math, like learning at the time, in elementary school, high school, calculus, long division, all those kind of things were kind of, it always just took a little longer to get the concept. So I always thought there was something a bit different. And it wasn't until I was on a date, actually, with a girlfriend of mine at the time. We're down by the lake, and, she was telling me about her ADHD, and she looked at me, at inspiration point there, and she says, I think you got ADHD.
Oh, how romantic.
Yeah, how romantic is that? And I thought, well, that's kind of a downer, really? Okay. And honestly, it came out of the blue. I didn't really. She was just telling me about her kind of diagnosis and all that. And so she said, I think you should go and get tested. And I can't remember the context of the conversation, but I guess I was complaining about certain things, maybe at work or what have you. And she'd go get tested. So I did. I went to her psychologist in Brampton, Dr. Linda Rowden, and she was great. And went through the whole, cognitive assessment.
Sure.
Went through, it was really like three or four visits, an hour to 2 hours each. It was pretty intense, as anybody who's gone through these tests know. Mm-hmm. But what was really cool was that at the end of it all, it made it real to me. It's, I actually came with a diagnosis of ADHD combined type. A combination of inattentiveness and hyperactivity. And so I was kind of the I would say personally, I felt I was more the inattentive type, kind of the stealth airplane, in the back of the classroom that was kind of suffering in silence, in class, whereas the kind of quintessential hyperactive kid was getting all the attention and all the support, really, where I wasn't.
So. Jason, it's called rose-colored glasses.
We lose
sight of what the real us is all about. Now, up until that time, were you looking for answers or just out of the blue from your girlfriend? Or how did that happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was not looking for answers, honestly. It wasn't because, something for me, at least, it was it's all I knew. Yeah. It's all I knew. It was a very mm-hmm. subtle fog, if you will, yeah. That it always took a long time to kind of make decisions. It always took a long time to come to certain realizations. Again, it's all I knew. So I felt this is just me. I don't know if there's anything wrong. Maybe it's just my perception of that something's wrong. So, no, I didn't actively pursue, looking for answers, to be honest. And I'll add to that that my brother, who I think is, unofficially undiagnosed, with ADHD, he was the more hyperactive type in school. So he got a lot of the attention, my parents' attention. He went through some very basic kind of psychological testing, but I don't think he completed it. So he never got formally diagnosed. So I guess the reason I mention is that, I wasn't the kid who had the challenges with school. I was an average to above average student, despite me having ADHD. So I was
really?
Lucky that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked my butt off. Let me be completely honest about that. I didn't work my butt off in elementary school or high school. It was just tough. I got good enough marks because I knew I wanted to go to university to get in. Mm-hmm. And that's where it became really tough. That's where I really had to work my tail off to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, that's the stigma that's out there. You say ADHD and, you're stupid or you're dumb or what. And that's not the case. It's just that, we have to know how to channel it and work with it. And obviously, up until that time, you were doing that. But once you got into the university realm, hey, it's the big leagues. You're a big boy. You know, there's nothing to lean on. And you're left to the wolves, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. For me in university, it was it's where the rubber hit the road. I could no longer, I don't want to say fake it, because I don't think I was faking anything. I just, like you said, Russ, I was coping somehow. And when I got to university, like you said, there was no supports. There was no one to help you with homework. It was up to you when you scheduled work to work on things, all that kind of stuff. You didn't have to go to classes if you didn't want to. And what actually, I wish I could say it was me that kind of, smartened up, or actually, I don't want to say smartened up either. They kind of woke up maybe to the realization, hey, I am coping. It wasn't me. It was actually after the first term, my marks were low enough that I got a letter sent to me from the dean of my program saying that, sorry, but, you're on probation.
Okay. Well, that's it. If you don't smarten up, right? I mean, sometimes we work the best under the worst conditions, that if we, if there are no other options, sometimes we can shine under those circumstances.
Exactly. This all or nothing kind of thing. We tend to, at least for myself, really kind of rise to the occasion. There's that last-minute-itis tends to work in our favor, because we kind of pull in all the resources and make it work, right? And so it was really that. It was interesting. The university, I went to McMaster, and the dean of social sciences called me in for a meeting. Actually, it wasn't just a letter saying, you're out of here you don't pull socks. They handled it really well, I thought, in hindsight. Called me in, I met the dean, and he took a very much a coaching approach with me. And he said, listen, I really believe you can do this. I want to see you here and pull through and not have to, kick you out. Yeah. So I want to set up a meeting with you at the end of the term to congratulate you. This kind of assumptive.
That's great.
Yeah. I thought this is cool. So I felt supported,
Well, it stands to reason. I mean, McMaster, with its parallels with the medical field, I don't associate them with, I'm more of a physical thing, but if any university is going to do it, I would probably put my money on McMaster, I guess.
It was my own personal experience. I'm not sure how others, have fared, but I really love my time at Mac, and certainly that dean was, it was just so much more helpful, as I'm sure you can appreciate, Russ, having that, supportive approach versus an adversarial kind of like them versus us, them versus.
But isn't that the way, though? I mean, kids going to school these days, and some are lucky like you were, and I'm talking maybe high school or, elementary school, that if the powers that be would only realize that if they worked with you, it's better for everyone, as opposed to, creating problems and I'm going to do this and I'm going to take you to court and all this other stuff. Just work with the kid.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Because I think what happens is we, as ADHDers, and again, I can only speak to my own experience really, but I do, being a coach and working exclusively with those with ADHD and executive functioning challenges, I know that we can, those of us who kind of can make it through have found coping mechanisms to survive. And sometimes that's, that's kind of faking it, it's faking the stuff that we don't really know how to do well, or acting, and just being brutally honest, but, sometimes, that can catch up with us, but I guess what I'm saying is, from the teacher's perspective, when they see a student in class that doesn't look like they're paying attention or want to pay attention, where this kind of ambivalent look on their face, implies that they don't care, when in fact they really likely do really care. Yeah. 9 times out of 10, they really do want to do well. Who wants to do poorly in school? Who wants to be the, the outcast with a teacher or with the class? I mean, so yeah, I think your point's well taken. When the teacher realizes that, what actually need the approach that would benefit the student the most, and ultimately the teacher, is that kind of supportive approach that, that, recognize that this student might be presenting, that he doesn't care or she doesn't care, but they probably really do. And maybe ask some questions to find out, what's behind, their behavior in a constructive way. And you might find, like, I'll give you an example, Russ, really quickly here is, I had this one student I was working with who had this very kind of, I don't want to be here kind of face, demeanor when I met with him at the clinic in Markham. And I was like, wow, okay, this guy is definitely not coachable. He does not want to coach. Mm-hmm. His mom probably forced him to come. And so I decided just to try a different approach with him. And I just decided to give him a compliment because there was something I saw that was a huge strength that he might not have recognized. And, and I said, so-and-so, I see this. This looks fantastic. Have you ever leveraged this, or expanded on it or developed it? And he looked at me and a tear came to his eye.
Really?
And this is like, tough, big guy. Yeah. And he said, something? No one's ever like acknowledged that. And I don't think I can't remember the last time anybody ever complimented me on anything.
You shook him out of that state.
What's that? Sorry?
You shook him out of that state. He wasn't prepared for what you were about to say, and maybe he was angry. I don't know. But sometimes the best thing is to get somebody who is in a specific state, maybe anger, and just hit him with something out of left field. And go, what? And you hit him with something that was a compliment.
Russ, it was just kind of gut feeling, but I just felt that the direction things were going wasn't working. And often in my practice, those who put up a bold face or a confident face, I have to say, at least with my kind of experience with our tribe, it's often a cover.
Sure, it's common. Yeah, it's very common. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that scenario because teachers, I'm not looking at, berating teachers, but some teachers, they do something that we're often accused of, and we often do, is knee-jerk reactions. And here you say that, you see this troubled kid, and he looks like trouble. He is trouble. I'm going to make sure that, I'm going to reprimand him. Whereas if they just sat down and just figured out, okay, why is the kid like this? And as you say, he does care, or she does care, but no one's caring about finding out the real reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Just being curious, to understand what's behind that, and even just as recently as a week ago, I have one of a student I'm working with who's in her, she's 17, she's in her last year of high school, hoping to go to university. She just got accepted, actually, and with a scholarship. And she, at the end of every coaching call, I always ask my clients, what was most helpful mm-hmm. about session today? And this one girl said, just the fact that you really listen, that's helpful to me. The fact that you actually are curious about, the why I'm doing things without judgment. And that's really helpful to me.
Well, that's the understanding part of it. I mean, I'm sure there are some listeners now saying, what? This person's got ADHD and he's coaching others. But the funny thing is that we're so good at helping other people, but not all that good sometimes helping ourselves.
Yeah. That's a great point. Actually, when I first started coaching, I have to admit, I wondered that myself. I thought, gosh, how am I going to help people with ADHD when I have it myself and have, struggled and coped my personally, for all these years. And to be honest, I couldn't answer it at the time. But then I realized quickly that after I started coaching, that one of the most important things that an ADDer needs is first of all, someone who gets them,
sure.
Someone who really understands what it's like to have ADHD.
Yeah.
That rapport, that's the critical element, because, if this person doesn't really understand what we're going through, the likelihood of opening up to them, is a lot lower, I think. And so that was the big thing going into coaching that was a huge help, was actually having ADHD.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, empathy is not very common for us. I mean, people were so misunderstood, and here you are, you have it. Who better than to help somebody who has it, who understands and can relate?
Yeah, I think so, you know, and to add to that maybe is, you know, I don't claim to have all the answers, you know, I certainly don't. But what I've realized is that I do have a personal history of coping successfully with a number of, you know, typical ADHD sure. symptoms and situations. But more than my own personal experience, I've become a bit of a hub, if you will, you know,
sure.
You know, a blog, if you will, where I've worked with hundreds of people with ADHD over the years, and I've learned from them because they've had
exactly.
their coping strategies.
Exactly. I mean,
know?
We're not the ones, or you're not the one as a coach and me looking after this club ADHD. We're not the ones who are supposed to have all the answers. If the way I look at it, that if you can help somebody find their answer and to help themselves, you know, then you're doing your job. If somebody's just going to come to you and you're giving them all the answers, you're just a crutch.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a real tough thing sometimes to bite my tongue. I want to give the answer that I think yeah. is so brilliant, you know? Well, often I'm wrong.
You put yourself out there, it's going to happen.
Yeah,
but, you know,
yeah.
that's not a bad thing. I mean, I know it's a corny phrase. Oh, we learn by our mistakes. If that's the case, and I'm sure it often is, but, man, all of us ADHDers, we should have a PhD in life skills because we make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
That's us. I mean, but what is a mistake? What is normal? I mean, it's so relative.
It's true. I think also that, you know, what's interesting with coaching with ADHD, I think why coaching works so well with ADHDers is because, you know, there's that rapport, there's that non-judgment, there's that safe place to mm-hmm. really talk about the challenges. But it's also, I think, unlike other forms of coaching, ADHD coaching does provide, at least my practice is developed to provide a buffet of some options, you know,
sure.
Like here's some things that other people with ADHD have done. What do you think? And maybe we could tailor make a solution for you, versus this, like, you know, this generic one that's off the assembly line, you know, cause which often almost never works. You know,
I bet you're there to really kickstart their creativity too. I mean, and when they're coming up with solutions, as you say, you're coming up with more information from them. It's a win-win.
Yeah. I just got off of a coaching call with a student actually at McMaster. He's in first year engineering, and, you know, he was wondering why he wasn't taking action on, we have this tool called a cockpit that organizes all their work at school. And, you know, he admitted it to me. He said, "Hey, gosh, because I can see it as well. It's on Google Drive." And instead of saying, you know, "Why didn't you do it?" You know, I said, "You know, what are your accomplishments this week?" He said, and he just admitted to me, I didn't, unfortunately, I got this done, but I didn't do that. You know, where I'm going with this is I said, "Well, what would help you get that done? What kind of motivators would help you, you know, get over this hurdle?" And I thought that, you know, motivating him in different ways would help. But he came back to me and saying, there were other motivating factors that I hadn't even considered that he put in front of me. So he kind of solved his own problem.
Sure. Wow. That's great.
So that's the way kind of coaching works. Most often works is that, you know, again, biting my tongue is one of the best things to do.
Now, being a coach, I mean, when did you discover that this is what I'm going to do? Was it in university or what did you major in?
You know, I struggled with what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, up until really I met my coach. I learned through my wife, actually, that there was somebody who might be able to help me with my ADHD. And, you know, ADHD coaching wasn't very well known at all back then.
Sure, yeah.
We're talking, you know, gosh, how many years ago, you know, 20 some odd years ago. And I was introduced to a woman named Barbara Durst, who is one of the first ADHD coaches in Canada. And it was really unique, you know, and I decided to go see her. And when I went and saw her, I just remember coming out of the sessions feeling invigorated, feeling better than when I had walked in, you know?
Sure.
And she had helped me with some kind of, career options and, what would best suit kind of my interests and my skills and my challenges too, with ADHD. And, after coaching with her for a couple of years, one day I just looked at her and said, "I think I want to do what you do."
Okay.
And she smiled and she said, "I think you'd be great." And it kind of started from there. And so that's really where I discovered ADHD coaching and decided to pursue coaching. I had actually done a little bit of coaching, like executive
Yeah.
small business coaching, but it just wasn't as fulfilling as this, you know?
Do you find
So
that
that's where it's.
what happens when you do you find that you ever get in a rut? I mean, we ADHDers, we have baggage that comes along, and I don't know if you have the comorbidity issues that some of us do, but depression is one of them and various other things. Do you find yourself ever in a rut, and especially when you have other people depending on you, what do you do?
Another really good question. There are days that sometimes I look at my coaching, my schedule, and it's often Wednesdays are usually pretty busy, and I go to the clinic. Sometimes I've had 7 or 8 clients in a day, and then I look at that and I wake up saying, "Oh my gosh," and I, ADHD is really a thick fog that day for me. Maybe I didn't have a good sleep or what have
Yeah.
you. It's sometimes hard because, like you said, other people are relying on you, and what I found would happen, I think initially, like early on, I would kind of do my best, kind of fake it if I could,
Yeah.
admittedly. But then I realized that that doesn't really work because coaching works when you're authentic and
Yeah.
people can tell the difference. And so I would just, now I just admit it. I say, I'd be vulnerable and say, "Listen, my ADHD is stronger today than most days.
Yeah.
I'm tired or what have you, but I'm going to do my best for you, and I hope that's okay."
But that's good, though. I mean, talk about empathy. I mean, here you are, you're admitting that you are, in this case, I use the word lightly, but maybe not, suffering or whatever, suffering much like they do. I mean, who wouldn't see that as a positive, really? I mean,
I guess I was reluctant to admit that
yeah, but I'm
because,
sure your patient wouldn't mind.
well, that's
Or
what
the
happened.
client.
Funny enough, again, when I would do that or when I do that, I hear almost a sigh of relief
Sure.
on the other side, kind of like, "Wow, he really is like me,
Exactly. The
Yeah,
real deal. Now,
the real deal.
some therapists in traditional sense, or in the psychological aspect of it, they get hit with all this stuff every day. And, they need a therapist or they need a psychiatrist because of everything that they're dealing with. It's a pretty heavy load. I mean, the weight of it all. Do you find that to be the case with ADHD coaching? Or on the flip side, as we often look, we're always on the flip side, is it more of a benefit than a hindrance?
I'm not sure. I work with a group of psychologists, a psychiatrist and psychometrist at the Chrysler Center in Markham, and there's a big group of us there, and I'm the go-to coach for ADHD at the clinic. And so I often am either referred clients from them, or of course I know them quite well, and so I understand their struggles and their challenges and et
Sure.
cetera. From a coaching perspective, I think that I definitely see a lot of the stuff that they likely see too, whether it's anxiety, depression, like coexisting
Yeah.
disorders. And when it's out of my realm, when
Yeah.
it's out of the ADHD space, I will refer out to them because I'm not trained to deal with those things.
Sure.
So from that perspective, I don't really get into it. However, these are whole people that you're dealing with, and so they bring their challenges and often personal ones to a coaching session, and sometimes it can be really, really tough. you know? And do I, you know, have I suffered in that way? Do I, how do I cope with those things? Is that your question,
yeah,
Russ?
It's exactly. Like, yeah. Post-traumatic,
you know,
ADHD.
I mean, there's some tough cases out there. I coach at a very reduced rate. A girl who's studying to be a doctor at UCLA in Los Angeles, and she's Latina, from a very, very poor family, can barely afford to go to school. Mom has mental issues. Father died recently. It's just, you know, one of our coaching sessions, let's just say this,
right. There
was her mom was a witness to a gang kind of murder or some kind of thing.
Yeah.
So she was on protection. And in one of our coaching sessions, she thought, my client thought that there was some gang members outside the house and actually had asked me to call the police from here. So, you know, those kind of things, it doesn't happen often, but I have had situations similar to that where, you know, it is very traumatic. It's not something I deal with every day. How do I deal with it? You know, I have my own kind of, you know, meditative times during the day that I just take a break. I will do, you know, I don't have a therapist that I go see, but I do. I do have a dog now. I do walk the dog in the forest.
An ADHD therapy dog.
Yeah. She's a busy dog. She's a, you know, sprawly border collie, Springer Spaniel mix, and she's great. She loves getting out in the forest, and we go for long walks. I also like to exercise a lot. So I'm a long distance runner, and I work out at the gym and swim a lot. So I really believe that over the last 15 years, exercise, not just for coping with some of the stuff I deal with as a coach, but personally, and in particular for my ADHD, the exercise has been incredible. There you go. That I think exercise is probably the number one stress reliever for me. Yeah.
I know if I were ever a coach and somebody came to me with the problems you just laid out as this girl, and I'm hyper-focusing on what you said, you know, a few minutes ago, I would, for the life of me, have a real tough time not hyper-focusing on not her ADHD, but what the hell's going on in her life and why is this guy outside and is he packing a pistol and blah, blah, blah. I mean, just to cut yourself off from that, man, that would have to be a big challenge.
You know, I have to say being a coach has forced me to, you know, be a lot more introspective, and a lot more, I've learned how to self-manage a lot better because, of my role as a coach.
Sure.
So I think the rule of thumb that I use to try to stay on track with a coaching call or, you know, and not get caught up too much, in the, you know, the hyper focus that could ensue,
the periphery
something like
stuff.
That. I think is it sounds as corny as it sounds, but it really, really works for me. Is I always have to put my client first.
Uh-huh.
So, whatever is of most benefit to my client in the moment is what I focus on. So if you know if it means that I, you know, me focusing on her, you know, her difficult situation isn't going to be helpful to her.
Right.
Then I need to move on, you know?
Well, that's very admirable. I give this once in a while. I'm going to give you a round of applause for that because that's the right answer, if there ever is a right answer. I mean, I couldn't do it. Maybe I could. Here, I'm self-doubt again. But no, it's very admirable to do that. When it comes to coaching, have you ever coached a coach?
Huh. I've never been asked that question. Have I ever coached a coach? I have a colleague that I work with that, you know, we run a lot of stuff by each other. She's never hired me as her coach and nor vice versa. But I think in some ways I've been that kind of, you know, I played that role for her.
Right.
But have I ever, coached a coach? I mean, no, I don't think so. I've coached, you know, doctors and lawyers and accountants and execs and all that, but I've never, and even, psychiatrist, but not a coach. That's no, I don't think I have.
Interesting. Speaking of some of your clientele, you don't have to give names, but off air, you were telling me about some of the people, the types of people you coach. Sometimes, you know, a lot of our listeners think, well, you know, there are successful people, yeah, but I'm not one of them, and there's more unsuccessful ADHDers than successful. But you do indeed, you're a coach for executives that are doing well, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think, I mean, doing well is a relative term.
Well, yeah, I mean, that are successful, meaning that, again, that's relative, but I mean, they're happy and they're in a happy place. That's corny. But they're actually making money. That's not successful, but hey, it doesn't hurt. They're doing what they want to do.
Yeah, you know what? I know what you mean. I think we all kind of have a general sense of, you know, what does successful mean on some level, you know? For me, I think when you talk about kind of success with ADHD, it's really, you know, someone who's able to, you know, be self-aware of their ADHD enough that they can manage it effectively, you know, and it's not, it doesn't permeate and seriously affect, you know, their entire lives, you know, as much as maybe those who don't are not as much able to manage it.
So it's not dictating their lives. Exactly. I mean, they're doing what they want to do, and ADHD is just part of them. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned some people that are doing some impressive things, and you know, that's very admirable in itself. But for you to be behind them, I mean, what would you say that we talked about this before too? That there are some people with ADHD, and we all know them, that are very successful. You know, what's the trick of it? Are they surrounding themselves with the right people?
You know, I guess first of all, I mean, if they had it all together and everything was perfect, I guess they wouldn't be hiring me as a coach.
No.
But that being said, you know, there are some that are just, you know, have found better coping. I don't want to say even better coping strategies, but they found coping strategies that seem to work for them. And have allowed them to be successful, quote unquote, in what they do. I'll give you some examples, without giving names, of course. But, you know, there's a number of, you know, I've worked with some physicians, for example, in the Toronto area, you know, who have a clinical practice at a, you know, local hospital, as well as their professors at a professor at U of T. You know, and I won't go any more detail than that. But but basically, you know, successful in their own right, but they publicly, they're successful, but privately, you know, on a treadmill, trying to manage it.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, one of them is a top researcher, in a specific field in the world, you know, but struggling like heck, you know, to kind of maintain it all. So they, you know, he came to me to help him, you know, manage his inbox, you know, of all things, you know, among other stuff. You know, executives, I work with an executive in Los Angeles right now, who runs one of the largest, kind of food companies in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's the top of the chain, the food chain there in his company. But struggles again with, you know, certain, relationship issues, I would say communication challenges within the company. So, because he wants to be the leader that he's always wanted to be, he wants to be, you know, respected by his team more, and he doesn't want to be abrasive or, what's the word? He wants to be empowering, you know,
right,
to his team. And so I work with him with, you know, on communication issues and identifying, you know, where he might be not describing his behavior. You know, sometimes it's impulsive behavior, or there's frustration in his voice because, you know, that hamster that's running around in his head, you know, can't slow down enough to communicate the ideas that he needs to his staff to get the job done. So things like that. To answer your question though, what, you know, has made guys like this successful, guys and gals, you know, successful? I think, you know, I actually asked this one individual that question, and he said, you know, the nature of the restaurant business, at a young age, even though he didn't know, I think, he had ADHD back then, he said allowed him the flexibility of time and space, and to kind of adjust, you know, so that he could kind of regroup when he needed to. He said if he had been in a, you know, 9-to-5 job that was very, very structured and rigid,
right,
for him at least, he said, probably wouldn't have survived. So everybody's different, right? So,
yeah,
but
I mean,
in his,
find your niche. I mean, that's what it's all about. But I'm thinking just one thing that popped into my ADHD brain is there's a common thread with the people you're mentioning, is the fact that, one, they realize that they need help, and two, they're willing to go out and get it.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge. And that's absolutely huge because, you know, that is a common denominator with a lot of these individuals. They realize that, you know, there are things that they can always work on. There are things that they need to work on. They admit that. And they're willing to be vulnerable. They're willing to say, hey, you know, I mean, like, here's the thing, you know, they're at the top of their game. You know, some of these guys, you know, they're the CEO of a, you know, big corporation, or they're a top doctor somewhere, or, you know, or whatever, they run a, you know, sole proprietorship, and they're doing well. But there's always something to work on. And they admit that I could do better and I want to do better and I need help with this. And please, you know, give me a hand with this. Something I didn't want to do. I'll admit, when I first hired Barbara, you know, my coach, way back when, I really didn't want to go there. I was so used, Russ, to doing things on my own and coping on my own that I felt I can do this on my own. And, you know, that was, how silly was that?
Well,
in
but
hindsight,
that's common. That's so such a common thread. But when you think about it, when you put it one step further, you know, initially you're hearing, well, what? A psychiatrist needs help with their mental issues? But when you think about it, does that mean if you're going to live life according to that kind of outside rule, you know, does that mean that a surgeon will never need surgery from someone else?
Right.
Yeah, think about it. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, again, it's a knee-jerk reaction that, oh, I don't need help. You know, I'm smart. If I need help, I'm dumb. I'm lacking in something. Well, we're all lacking in something. I mean, I'm just learning, just talking to you, the ideas that are coming into my mind. I mean, it's just it's a give-and-take situation, but, you know, and I'm probably the worst, you know. I'll admit, I don't have a coach. And you know something? I think I need one. I don't think I need one. And I'm sure some of our listeners out there are saying the same thing. Not that I, you know, pointing their finger at me, but to themselves.
Sure, sure. You know, I think one thing that I've learned over the years, and maybe it's just me just getting older, I'm not sure, but I think that a good friend of mine, a mentor, he was my professor of, by the way, I graduated at McMaster with a degree in medical anthropology, honors degree. So I was very interested in medicine at the time. And long story short, I didn't get into, I didn't apply to med school because I didn't know at the time if I would have the, it wasn't so much maybe the smarts. I think it was more, did I have the stamina of the study?
Oh yeah, that's
that
rigorous. Focus. Yeah.
I just didn't know if I could do it. And again, I didn't know I had ADHD. So, but I got to know this professor really well. He's a great guy, Dr. Dennis Wilms. And he, you know, is very much a mentor to me. And he told me one time, he said, I was actually getting married and I was asking for, you know, what's some, you know, last minute, you know, words of wisdom before I get married, Dennis. And he said, you know something, tell your family and all your friends at the table that I can't do this alone. We can't do this alone. You know, we need everybody's involved in this. And it's not just, you know, my future wife and I. And I really extend that to everybody. I mean, it sounds corny, I know, but whether you're a psychologist, you know, who needs, you know, a therapist, or a surgeon who needs a surgeon, you know, we're all human. At the end of the day, we are all in this together.
Sure.
And we all have our imperfections. And if there's one thing I've learned out of coaching so many very interesting people from such diverse backgrounds, is that we all want to to feel special, and we all want, we all need support from each other.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody who actually, you know, quote unquote, made it that didn't do so without the help of someone.
Yeah. I mean, again, those that I coach that are, you know, kind of at the top of their game, they're the most humble people you ever want to meet.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's nothing to prove. And they're really looking on how do I serve better?
Right. Well, that's what it's all about. Giving, and what you give, you get. I firmly believe that. And it's not just, you know, a phrase, but something came to my mind. I want to ask you your opinion, Jason. On our Twitter site, there's a regular poster there. And, well, some of the listeners might know who I'm speaking of, but he's kind of lost. He goes on and he's tried various things and obviously trying to fit into these square pegs and just not cutting it, but very creative person, a smart, intelligent fellow, just not making it, whatever that means. I mean, just in life, I guess. And I reached out to him. I said, you know, if you can't fit somebody else's hole in a job scenario, create your own job. Then he came back to me. Well, what do you think? What would you suggest somebody listening now is going through something similar, that, you know, they're not conforming, as we don't, to other people's expectations. And sometimes you have to go out on your own with some help from others. What would you say to that person? How do you start?
Wow. I mean, that's a big question. I think, I guess first off, I recognize the fact that, yeah, we don't conform. You know, we have a lot of trouble with conforming.
Yeah.
I've always felt, you know, kind of out of place, out of sync, you know, the square peg in the round hole all the time. That could be really, really demoralizing over a period of time. You know, we feel like we just don't fit anywhere. So I hear that, and that's tough. But at the same time, we can't ignore the fact, in my opinion, that there is another world out there, and that world communicates differently in some ways than we do. And I always talk about kind of our world as ADHD and another world that's around us, and how do we communicate with that world, and almost like a translator, you know, like Babelfish or, you know, yeah. Google Translate. You know, it's not that huge of a difference in languaging, but there is a distinct difference. And, you know, when we learn the ways to communicate, whether verbally, you know, written or behaviorally with that other world, life gets easier. And so I think we don't have to change who we are, but we do need some tools to be able to work with the rest of the world,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that would be the first thing. And I think the second thing I would say is that, you know, if there's a shortcut, you know, I mean, I don't want to present that there is a shortcut, but if there was a shortcut, in my opinion, you know, to being successful and being happy with ADHD, it's really, it is really finding what elates you,
right.
You know, what really, really energizes you, and finding a way to pursue it, you know, career-wise if possible,
yeah.
Or academically, you know, or even hobby-wise. Don't ignore it. And often, I think I even, you know, myself, I used to, I wouldn't consider that those things that I liked, you know, were actually doable or feasible or financially rewarding. But, you know, I've seen, it's crazy, the world these days with the internet making it so accessible, you know. You can make a business out of almost anything right now.
Exactly. I mean, with YouTube, as I told him, and George Carlin brought up an interesting note, and George has been dead for a while, but he said, God, there's even a magazine on walking. I mean, who'd have thought? I mean, you never know what your interests will lead to. Pimple popping? Ugh, what's that? There's TLC's got a huge program on that from a person who, you know, was addressing cysts and stuff on YouTube, and now look what's going on. I'm not saying you should do that, but you can if you want to. You're right. I mean, it's amazing what's out there and the interests that you can tap in on and actually make money.
Oh yeah. I would say never say never.
You know,
there is certainly, you know, follow your passion and really, really explore it. Because and there's a method to my madness there, and that is that often ADHDers we struggle with structure, organization, task mm-hmm. and time management, those things. And with especially with task management, if it's something that you're doing at a job that you don't like, you might hate your job, unfortunately. But if it's something that you're reluctant to do or procrastinating about,
right.
then there's usually a good reason behind it, and if you can find something that you're passionate with, often the task initiation challenges and task management challenges get minimized, and in some cases almost disappear, because we're able to, just have this boundless amount of energy. Certainly, it could turn into hyperfocus and we can go down rabbit holes. Totally get that.
Yeah.
But at least you're not dealing with all these other kind of, avoidance issues or procrastination
right.
issues. So, so find your passion and follow it, whether it be a career, personally, or hobby wise, because it'll bring joy and it'll fulfill that, perhaps that creative, need
sure.
that you might be missing.
Good advice. And especially employers, have you heard that? If you have somebody who has ADHD, make sure you try to match their interest to your interest, and they get hyper-focused. Look out. I mean, we can do amazing things. Well, Jason, we're running out of time here, but I'm very happy that you decided to be with us, and you provided us with some very, very valuable information, and just your story ever so briefly we touched upon that. I'm sure there are people in our audience that are saying, yeah, I can get on with life now. Not to say that they weren't prior, but I mean, you're a person who has ADHD. You made your career, ironically, revolving around ADHD, and you're doing good things.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Russ. It's been a pleasure. And I really hope that everybody listening, embrace your ADHD, you guys. Trust me, you embrace it and follow your passion. Find those ways to communicate with the other world, and have fun with it. If you need to find a coach, don't hesitate. I think coaching can be really, really helpful. So thanks again. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Problem. Jason, this is my ADHD's kicking in. I want to sing Kumbaya, but no, I'm just whacking stuff. Now, a shameless plug here. How do people get a hold of you if they'd like to explore the possibility of your coaching abilities?
Oh, well, thanks. My website is currently under renovation right now, but it will be up in the next month or so. But you can find me at the Chrysalis Center in Markham. It's a psychological services center that we focus on ADHD and there's anxiety, depression, those kind of disorders. We have a great team there, and as I mentioned, I'm the go-to coach there for ADHD. So if you'd like to connect with me, if I can help, great. If not, there's a bunch of coaches that I could refer you to as well. And so please check us out. We're on the CADAC website.
Okay.
I'm on the CADAC website, I think, too.
Very good.
And by the way, I will say this too, that coaching doesn't have to be, local. You don't have to be in the Markham or Toronto area to benefit from ADHD coaching. There's a great number of coaches out there. I coach people all across the United States and Canada, virtually via Skype or by telephone. So, connect with me if you'd like, and I'll put you in touch with somebody, if not me or somebody else.
Hey, I think that went pretty well. I know, I've said it before, I'm biased, but I learned something from it, and I hope you did too. Thank you very much, Jason. And if you want to reach Jason, he mentioned a website, but you might be asking yourself, how do you spell Chrysalis? Okay, chrysalispsychologists.ca. Well, Chrysalis is Chrysalis. Or you can Google Jason Froates, Froates. Maybe throw an ADHD for good measure, and you'll see the links pop up. It's as simple as that. Perhaps he or his colleagues can help you. I think we should have him on again. Show of hands? Yeah, I knew there'd be several up there. Thanks again, Jason. You helped a lot of people. Of course, this is Club ADHD, the podcast, and it's about time to wrap things up for this edition. Of course, don't forget about not only the podcast, we have Club ADHD, the Facebook page, and the Twitter account, all supported by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, CADAC, and would like to thank them too. I'd like to say that I'm part of them a lot, in a lot of different scenarios, and proud to be that way. Been associated with them for the past, it's been more than 10 years. Good people, good information. They're there to advocate on our behalf. ADHD. We need all the help we can muster. That being said, don't forget to tell people about this podcast, about Club ADHD in general. We'd love, or I'd especially love to have more people join. No membership fee, no hazing, no nothing like that. Just click like, or just click, hey, listen to the podcast. All the podcasts are listed at clubadhd.ca, or you can check out maybe some of your favorite listening spots. iTunes, we're there. We're covered there. And some of the other places where you go to listen to audio, like Spotify, yep, we're there. And various other ones, too numerous to mention. People are picking us up every day. So just type in Club ADHD and see what you come up with. I'm sure you'll come up with us. Glad to have you aboard. That said, as we wrap up this edition, this is your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, wishing you a terrific day. Catch again in a few days' time. Hey, I've got to get caught up here. Fingers crossed. And don't forget, as I always say, there are opportunities galore. What type of opportunities? Opportunities for all of us to say, ADHD is real. Bye for now.